Here we are at the distribution now, the brand new warehouse in West Texas, next to the Halliburton building. Just got done with the mayor of Odessa, Javier Hoven, and now we have the Midland mayor joining us because really, from where I come from, Fargo-Moorhead, we're in two different states, but even the chamber is Fargo-Moorhead, West Fargo. They even include the third, you know. So Midland and Odessa, I was really happy that you were able to make it out here because I always love it when the two different communities work together, even if it's a symbolic nature and a number of different things. Thanks for coming out today, and did you make it okay?
Oh, yeah. Long ways from Midland, actually.
But, people don't realize everything's 25 to 35 minutes here.
Easy. If you're going from one city to the other, we're 13 miles apart, but sometimes it feels like 100.
It does. So talk about just the community as a whole, you guys working together, and really what this means for you, what this means opening up in Odessa for Midland.
Well, for all of us, just the economic evolution. A lot of people talk about economic diversification, but any diversification we have has to be connected to the oil and gas industry. Most people, your listeners know this, but the normal everyday person doesn't understand how many companies and organizations are involved in oil and gas, from distribution warehouses of goods and services to the people who are making the roads so you can get out to the rigs and get out to the frack locations. And so anything we can do alongside the industry, and the two of us can do, as Secretary Evans calls it, in the heartbeat of the most secure and safe oil and gas region in the world, then we have to do that alongside of that industry and see what we can do to improve it and make it better.
You heard me mention in the previous interview that I was told a number of years ago that 70% of the drilling over the next 20 to 30 years is projected to come out of the Permian.
Right.
And that was before all this regulation stuff. It's just interesting how it just really seems to be going that way as the smoke kind of clears on a number of different things. Hook or crook, by coincidence or not, what do you think about that projection of, taking a look? It seems pretty accurate.
Yeah, it's an accurate projection. The biggest challenges behind it are where we are today and the things we're facing with Ukraine and Russia and what we're hearing in the political world. I was on a radio show this morning, and so many people think that the oil industry just sort of pokes holes in the ground and oil comes out. And they don't realize that over the last, it's easy to say 3 or 4 years, this industry has faced an onslaught of really bureaucracy coming after it. And it's been a lack of investment, a lack of capital investment. And so for us to get to that number, the 70%, and for us to produce the barrels of oil we can produce, there's going to have to be a little bit of an attitude change about investment in the oil and gas industry, or it's going to be slower than it should be. It's not going to be as high as it could be, as fast as it could be. So we've got a tough road ahead of us in the regulatory environment to just take advantage of what we have here. It's going to be a long road.
You mentioned regulations. You mentioned financing. I'm going to go into the ESG topic, and we're going to do this through the social. We're going to do this through the governance. If you want to attack on the environmental, go ahead. But that is what's driving a lot of the investments now. And we've been, Crude Life, we've been pretty upfront that it doesn't seem to me legal, if not fair, that you can be impacting people's, stock scores and all these other things when we don't have rules and regulations set up, a number of different things. You work for the government. What are they telling you about ESG? What do you make of this stuff?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting phrase to say, I work for the government. As the mayor of Odessa knows, we make about $75 a month.
Right.
So we have companies that we run and things we do. We really volunteer to serve in the community, which, to your question, is the difference. When you look at what happens in Washington, D.C. and Austin, you're looking at career, oftentimes politicians who aren't aware of the things they're doing and promoting that are damaging industry. And one quick point to that, when you talk about the E of ESG and you don't have a wake-up call like we're having on the globe today, then people aren't able to hear that we produce a barrel of oil in the Permian Basin 75% cleaner than anywhere else in the world. So if you want safe environmental oil and gas exploration and production, it has to happen in the basin and in North Dakota and in North America so we can continue to lead the way. All the gains we make here environmentally are absolutely done away with what they do in China, Venezuela, Russia, and other places. So while ESG issues can be a part of the important conversation, if we high side on ESG symbolically, then substantively we miss out on the opportunities that we have for energy.
Back in 2016, when we first started discussing this, we backdoored into it because of Meridian Energy Group. They were building the first refinery in 50 years, greenfield from top to bottom. They had to respond to like 47,000 robot complaints. So they were on the front line of this ESG fire. because it's in my backyard, we were doing these weekly, we call them environmental reports.
Right.
They were ESG reports.
Right.
So, because we were tackling the social aspect, we were tackling the governance aspect, the environmental. And what we were saying is that really the oil and gas industry is the leader in the environmental movement.
Right.
It's their investment in innovation. A lot of archaeologists would not have jobs without the oil and gas industry. That's the story I think that the industry and the media needs to tell.
Yeah.
I bring up the media because last time we spoke, I bring up this example a lot to people that Wall Street Journal, LA Times, they flat out say to you, what's it like to be the mayor of the planet rape or mayor of the city raping the planet?
Right.
Sorry, it's not a journalistic question, so I'm not used to saying it. Talk to me about what my responsibility in the media is and what we can talk about with these ESG issues.
Well, it's a popular, like I said, symbolic argument to have about the environment and what oil and gas does because people's only reference to it is the movie Waterworld or something like that. And so what they hear is not a reality. We had a group of Princeton students here several years ago that when they were finished, we sat down and had a barbecue dinner with them, and they said, we didn't expect to see what we actually saw. And so when people begin to get an understanding of it, and I think that's beginning to turn around now when, again, the third time I've mentioned it, when the world begins to go haywire like it's going, then the symbolism of what makes you feel good about ESG, and ESG isn't bad in and of itself, but if you use it as a whipping tool for something without perspective, then it becomes dangerous to the industry. And now people are having to wake up and go, wait a minute. You're even hearing people over the last 3 or 4 years who are in the equity market saying, whoa, 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 we're not even going to be able to power the electric vehicle fleets if we don't do the things that need to be done. I was in D.C. January of 2020, and a bunch of journalists were outside of a room that some of us mayors were in an environment meeting, and I walked out and asked the journalist, I said, do you really think you can get to sustainable green energy without responsible oil and gas industry? And I said, you can't. And it was a question I asked them they had no answer for. So we do our business well here, then we'll be able to be sustainable on our energy policies as long as we keep our energy policies and not electrification policies. It's all of the above. And you can drive around in this area. We have 250,000 people that go to work every day in the Permian Basin in oil and gas, wind and solar, and all different ways of producing energy. This region, North Dakota, Pennsylvania, the Eagle Ford, even parts of California, we understand energy and policies that make for good energy, but we just have to get past the symbolism in the journalism. And we're getting there because I think it's a wake-up call.
You mentioned symbolism. Now, I do want to point out that this may seem political to some of you people, and it might even go a step further. It might even be offensive to some people. However, I want you to keep in mind, I was an altar boy. I have taught Sunday school. I've read the Bible twice, and I even am ordained. However, this gentleman here, what is your profession?
Well, I actually have a consulting company, but I retired from being a pastor for over 18 years.
So he is the expert in this, not me. However, I have brought up, and I'm very careful where I bring this up, because you know that religion is very, it's the original trigger.
Yeah,
it's the original trigger.
No doubt.
But we live in a world where apparently if you lead with your sexuality and your health and your religion, you fit in.
Right.
Because in my world, those were all taboo.
Right.
I brought up back in 2017 that I started seeing a very distinct correlation between original sin with the Garden of Eden and this environmental movement. Because it's so easy to go and connect with the environment. And with the Christianity that's in place, we automatically connect with this original sin. So I started seeing this correlation, and we tried to call the religion and the environmental and the cult of the it's too much.
Yeah.
You, however, you're used to these kind of discussions, theologic discussions, ideological discussions. Do you see that connection that I'm talking about to where it's almost by a marketing design to take that climate change down the path of Garden of Eden, original sin?
Well, I would take it a different place.
Please do.
I think the environmental movement is its own religion. It has its own preachers. It has its own theology. It has its own theology in the sense that if you question it, then you must be a denier of that theology, and so people will come after you for denying that theology. And it also limits discussion, which sometimes in the past in the church world, if you questioned a doctrine, you were going to get in trouble for questioning it. So do I think it's its own theology and its own movement? religious, in a religious sense? Absolutely. I think the other part of that is when you're as abundant as we are in the United States and you take energy for granted, sometimes you can have the discussion that a spoiled, rotten kid can have who says he has nothing while he's driving his Porsche down the street and he's 18 years old. But you don't realize the necessity for reliable energy around the globe when literally billions of people don't have reliable energy. And so you lose perspective, just like the churches sometimes have lost perspective in the United States about what they have. When I've traveled to Uganda and other places around the world, and you realize, wait a minute, there's a bunch of people around this globe who all they have is a little solar panel on the top of their house, and the power goes off at 5 o'clock. And so you just need a broader perspective, and sometimes a very religious approach to it stymies conversation that you need to be having.
So let's talk about the humanity side of things. Mm-hmm. Let's take religion out. Let's talk about spirituality, the humanity side. And one of the things that I feel that we connected on was your passion towards sex trafficking advocacy and awareness. Sean Forbes, who was my guest co-host at the Williston Basin Petroleum Show, I asked her to go find a social cause, and she came back with Ashley Smith from Truckers Against Trafficking.
Right.
So I thank Sean Forbes every time for bringing that to my attention, because I wasn't aware how much of an issue this was. Sex trafficking, oh, okay, well, that must be the...
something that happens in Vegas
Red Light District. The foreign underbellies, yep. Right? All these things. Well, no, now I'm finding out it's this domestic problem. They're luring people in on the internet. My 14-year-old son could be playing games online with somebody who's got a 3-year plan for when he's 17 to ditch home and go get trafficked without even knowing it. So it opened my eyes as a parent.
Yeah.
When I was introduced to you and your passion towards it, I'm like, oh, somebody who can speak more articulately and probably more eloquently than me, because, oh, I'm just a parent with passion, man. Mm-hmm. I represent us. Don't worry. I mean, my voice is needed, but also a calm voice is needed, like Ashley Smith, like yourself. Talk to me and update where we're at. What are you doing? Yep. That sort of thing.
Well, if you don't mind me giving a plug on my podcast,
please do.
No Neutral Moments. I have an interview with Lisa Bounds, the founder of Reflection Ministries. And this ministry with Lisa, she was a member of our church from the very beginning, and she was awakened to this issue through her own personal experience. And really began opening a number of eyes, has gone to Washington, D.C. and other places. We had Senator Cornyn here not long ago. We were having a press conference about this issue. And the thing that's alarming, like you said, is you hear the word sex trafficking, and your mind cannot comprehend how extensive it is. It's a $150 billion industry in the United States. $150 billion.
That's like esports.
It's, you know, if using the example of a young person, most of them are groomed into sex trafficking long before they're 17 years old. It's 12, 13, it's 8, it's 9. These are hard things to hear. They're trafficked anywhere from 30 to 40 times a day. The more shocking thing, and what we're very proud of the fact that our industry is paying attention, is that the Permian Basin is in the top 5 in regions in the United States for sex trafficking. And part of that is because these victims are trafficked from coast to coast. We're on I-20, and so we're a place where a lot of trafficking takes place. And we need to be aware of it and awake to it and be alert to it. And unfortunately, we have a lot of transient workers in our workforce who are away from their families and get themselves in bad situations. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the statistics that are very disturbing are the people who participate in the purchasing of these trafficking issues look more like you and I than they look like someone we might draw as a typical candidate to engage in this. And in fact, the average is about 50 years old, professional white man. And so we have to wake up to this. We have to make sure our industry wakes up to it. We have to make sure that at man camps and in other working places, when they do safety meetings, they're talking about not just the safety of wearing your hard hat, but the safety of your sexuality and what's happening around you and not getting yourself involved in this. The more we awaken the general public to this is happening and we don't turn a blind eye to it, the quicker we can get rid of this scourge. But it is it's a tragic thing that's happening. You can't even really find the descriptors to talk about how bad it is. But I'm thankful that here in the basin, there's a wake-up taking place, there's recognition taking place, and there'll be a response that takes place as we continue to get the message out and we continue to see industry leaders like they're already doing saying, hold on, we didn't even know this, and this is not going to take place under our watch. And that is right in the midst of, quite frankly, the environmental health of all of us and the social importance of all of us and the governance of our organization stepping up and saying, we're going to fight this. That is a legit ESG moment, sometimes even more important than the other things we're discussing.
And what is your podcast again?
No Neutral Moments.
No Neutral Moments. Yeah. We'll make sure we have it linked up, too, on the show page. And last question, you couldn't have summed it up any better. And I wanted to bring up the ESG part because the way I try to explain it to people is that there's some good in it, but there is some overreach without a doubt. The part that I think is that when you look at the railroad, you look at the oil and gas industry, and even the mining in the early days, it's a lot of men away from their families.
Yep.
Drinking, gambling, eventually it leads to a lot of other things. One of the best lines ever, I don't know a very good decision ever made at 2 a.m. in the morning while you're drunk, right?
Exactly, with a bunch of other guys.
Right. How often do you make good decisions then, right? With your background, your faith background, that is one element of ESG I think that oil and gas could understand is when they brought in the man of faith, all of a sudden there was some family values brought into that camp that wasn't there before. They didn't see that profit till about a year later. That is the only thing I can almost connect with them on with the social aspect of it. You know, you start making your employees feel better about working, you're going to have double the production in no time. So I don't know if you understand what I mean by that.
No, I think I would put it this way. There's a great author named Robert Greenleaf who wrote a book called Servant Leadership in the late 60s and early 70s. And he made the case that if industry does not get ahead of regulation, regulation will cripple industry. This was back in the late 60s, early 70s. There's nothing negative about paying attention to and taking care of the environment. There's nothing negative to paying attention to and protecting your social welfare and the social fabric of your community. There's nothing really different between the sacred and the secular when it comes to our workplace. And there's nothing wrong with talking about governance and making sure we're representing people. Industry and people in our industry, we put our heads down every day and we just go to work and we don't think of these things. It doesn't mean they're not important to us. It's a wake-up call for us as an industry to say, hang on a minute. Environmental, social, and governance matters. So let's make sure we take care of that before we're made to take care of it through regulation. Because Robert Greenleaf was right. If you don't pay attention to these things that need to be paid attention to, the regulatory environment will crush you when you could have proactively dealt with it. That's why we need to get proactive in all these issues.
And in closing, I have a gift for the mayor. It's some Bakken crude.
I was making sure I was going to get some.
You bet. I got some Bakken crude for you, sir. That is a 9-time arm wrestling champion. Alan Bound gave that to me. It was in the ground for 3 million years, and now it is right there. It can actually work in a real diesel apparatus like the third string. Diesel, third rate. It'll smoke like crazy, but that's one of the reasons why the Bakken is so sought after, because that's how it comes out of the ground. It's like 90% refined already and everything.
Tell
else.
Mayor Klug hello for me.
I will do that. Thank you for coming on the program, by the way. And I'm going to, by the way, here, put that in here because it is.
I didn't know if that was your spit cup. Or
no, you can take a look at that.
Yeah, okay.
In Texas, you never know. Is it a spit cup or an oil cup?
It looked like a spit cup.
Thank you, folks.